Show with John Morgan. This is John Morgan. And once again, I am coming to you from the only place a man should be speaking to you when recording a podcast, if he's sitting in Las Vegas, and that is on the patio of Buffalo Wild Wings. Warm Springs in Durango here in Las Vegas, kind enough to let me set up shop here and do some work. I've got a nice frosty beverage in front of me, as we should. And didn't get a chance to go to Montreal this week for UFC 186. Instead, the team up there is holding it down. Matt Erickson, Mike Bond, Justin Park doing a fantastic job for Montreal. I will not be attending UFC 186. Instead, I stayed back in Las Vegas. Did make a day trip out to San Jose, so we'll talk about that. Visit the famed American Kickboxing Academy and had an interesting Wednesday as well. A little bit of time in court, a little bit of time in gym. Fortunately, I wasn't the defendant in court, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But did get plenty of content to bring to you this week. Definitely another busy week here, even though we spent most of it here in Las Vegas. And that will change in May big time. Australia, the Philippines, Brazil, all on the docket for May. So if you're worried about the MMA Roadshow not actually spending as much time on the road as you'd like, don't worry. It's going to happen. So, listen, let's talk about the adventures that happened this week. Always Instagramming pictures of the things that we do. So if you want to follow along, or if you want just to, you know, to get some visual images of what we're seeing as we're describing it, follow it on Instagram, at the MMA Roadshow. Is it at? I'm still learning Instagram. I just started this. So it's the MMA Roadshow on Instagram, whatever that is. So hopefully it's at. I know that's Twitter. I'm learning. Cut me some slack. So let's talk about this week. Tuesday started out a media day at American Kickboxing Academy. Now, the UFC worked with AKA to arrange this, and basically it was designed so that Cain Velasquez, UFC heavyweight champion who fights this summer to unify his belt with the interim title Fabricio Werdum, basically it was done so that he could get a lot of his interviews out of the way. From what I understand, he's got a lot of commitments between now and the fight. He's got to go down to Mexico a couple times for some media appearances, in addition to all the media that he'd have to do here. So the idea was, listen, let's get as much media done as we can. That way he can turn down plenty of requests over the next coming weeks as his schedule is going to be busy. But people still get the access that they wanted. So the UFC set that up with AKA. But the great thing about going there is, in addition to Cain Velasquez, you've got Josh Thompson there. You've got Daniel Cormier there. And you've got Khabib Nurmagomedov there as well. And all of them have some big UFC fights coming up as well. So I was able to get in there and talk to all them. And you'll certainly see a lot of videos on MMAJunkie.com this week and next about the visit. So was a fun day. You know, got up in the morning, took an early flight out to AKA on Tuesday morning. Was the first time I've ever been to AKA. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that. And all the trips that I used to make to San Jose to see Strikeforce events and the like, just never made it out to AKA. We had a really small staff back then. It was just, you know, Dan Stupp and I, and of course, even once we brought on Steven Morocco, still just a tiny staff, and really just didn't have the luxury to get out for the day when we were on these trips. And, you know, we weren't doing video at the time either, so it just didn't make a lot of sense to spend a day away from the computer. So the first time I've ever been at AKA, massive gym. Looks like an old health club of some type that they purchased and set up shop in. And I say that because it's got like some old racquetball courts that they've matted, and which is kind of cool. It makes for little sectioned off areas, which I think, you know, kind of helps keep classes apart from each other, keeps people away from each other a little bit. A lot of the injuries that happen in training happen when there's too many people on the mat, and this kind of avoids all that. So a really cool setup there. Did make me yearn a little bit for the old days of the old AKA. The stories are that there was, you know, kind of an old sweatshop in the old location, you know, that where guys were grinding and an old school gym, so to speak. So kind of made me wish I'd made it out there. But certainly the new version of AKA is fantastic as well, as, you know, their team success certainly indicates. Day started out pretty funny. We were kind of milling around and waiting for things to get started, waiting for practice to get started. And one of the first things that happened is Khabib Nurmagomedov walks in the door. Now, UFC PR team had brought a championship belt along with them for Cain Velasquez so he could take some pictures and he could do it in his video opportunities. It's my understanding that Cain's belt is at home, but it's in a display case, so he really doesn't like to bring it out for anything if he doesn't have to. And so they said, no big deal, you know, we'll just bring along an extra championship belt that we can use, and we'll use that one. Well, Khabib walks in the door, and the first thing he does is see the belt, and he says, is this Cain Velasquez's belt in the PR rep that was there? He says, no, as a matter of fact, it's not. And with that, without hesitation, he walks over to the belt, picks it up, and says, oh, so then Dos Anjos sent this for me. and puts it over his shoulder and starts taking pictures with his team. And I was able to get a quick picture to put on Instagram as well. So just love the swagger that Khabib Nurmagomedov brings to the table. You know, if you're not following him on Twitter, be sure and do that at Team Khabib, Khabib. The guy is really going out of his way to learn English and to actively take part in social media discussions. You know, a little bit of trash talking, a little bit of hype, that sort of thing. And I asked him because in the beginning, I thought for sure he just had some social media manager that was doing it for him. He said, "No, listen, man, this is me. I'm doing this stuff." And he gave a full interview in English. His English is getting incredible. But love the swagger that he's got, and love what he brings to the lightweight division. He's been out for a while. Got a huge fight with Donald Cerrone coming up in May. Got to think the winner of that gets Rafael Dos Anjos, the UFC lightweight champion, sometime later this year. So some big fights coming up in the lightweight division. You know, it looked like Anthony Pettis was set to reign for a while, but and that division is wide open right now. Got to love what Nurmagomedov brings. Undefeated, he's the real deal. So kind of funny to see his little swagger start the day. After that, you know, as everybody made their way in, it was time to get wrestling practice started. There was a two-hour wrestling practice. And, you know, the thing that I took away from that was really fun to see was seeing Daniel Cormier really coaching the class. And, you know, I knew he was the head coach there, the head wrestling coach. We knew, of course, that he was the main training partner for Cain Velasquez and all that. But I don't know. I guess in my head I always thought Daniel Cormier was kind of more of a team captain, so to speak, or a you know, I don't know, just an honorary type title to say that he was the head wrestling coach. But no, I mean, the guy is running practices. You know, he's calling out people when they're not doing right. He's motivating when they're doing wrong. He's stopping to display techniques, calling the drills that are going to be done. And it was really neat to see him do that and see what an active role he really is taking in that team. And the guy seems to be in a good place right now. We spoke to him briefly, of course. He's got a big fight with Ryan Bader coming up in New Orleans in June. And Cormier's super excited, a Louisiana native, super excited to be headlining on there. And really has kind of put the emotions of the John Jones loss behind him and realizes he was far too emotionally invested in that. You know, he had put too much into it and it's had to step back a little bit. And I think it's going to be great to see him back in there. Ryan Bader, no joke. Sometimes I think undervalued, underrated, and I think that's going to be a big challenge for him. So, but it was really cool to see Daniel Cormier doing that. Now, the funny takeaway, and I say it's funny because it's funny now, it wasn't funny at the time, was from this wrestling class, about 20 seconds into the start of it, UFC heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez is hurt. And I'm not kidding you, 20 seconds into the start of this wrestling practice. There's camera crews all around. You know, in addition to me, there was about 20 other media members there. Several of them have cameras. Unfortunately, I didn't have my camera trained right in the direction that Cain was when this happened, so I couldn't initially see what happened. But he turns and kind of heads out of the wrestling room. He's got his hand covering his face and just wasn't sure exactly what was happening. He leaves the wrestling room, ends up going to a treadmill and running for the remainder of practice to still get his cardio work in, but wasn't really sure exactly what had happened. And, you know, of course, nobody around him is gonna say anything. You know, trying to ask Cormier, Josh Thompson, you know, what'd you see, what happened, and they're not going to say anything. I mean, they're not going to give their teammate up. So I'm just thinking, gosh, what are the odds that Cain Velasquez is hurt again? What's going on? I say it's funny now, and the reason I can, you know, very openly talk about it is because you'll see the video if you haven't seen it already. What ended up happening was it was a very, very minor cut over his right eye. And fortunately, you know, didn't require any stitches, didn't require any kind of, you know, butterfly bandages or anything like that. I think it just looks like you put a little new skin on there, and it looks like it's going to heal up just fine. It's not going to be anything that you're going to have to worry about reopening in the fight, causing any issues during the actual fight. But you can see it. I mean, you can see for yourself in the video. It's just a tiny, tiny little thing over his right eye. So fortunately, that it ended up being worse than it was. But it was kind of scary for a few moments. You thought, what are the odds that he's got media here and 20 seconds into this practice he's hurt? So fortunately, he's okay. Kind of piggybacks on the item that we got to talk to about all the AKA guys. Of course, you know, UFC president Dana White did an interview with Setanta Sports over in Ireland. It aired right before we got there, where he basically called out AKA for training in the Stone Ages, for having, you know, an old approach to how they do business, and was able to talk to everybody there. We put up a video on MMA Junkie. You can see it if you haven't already. bottom line is everybody just kind of rolled with it and said, yeah, listen, man, I mean, we appreciate what he's saying. Nobody's mad. We appreciate the fact that he's cares about us, that is concerned about us, that wants the sport to do good. But I promise you, you know, we're not being reckless. We're not being silly. We're just working hard, and that's what it takes. And, you know, I don't think Dana really meant to call out AKA so directly. I think that was probably just the gym that was on his mind at the time. I mean, I think this is a big initiative for the USC. They haven't talked about it a whole lot, but they will be talking about it more. They're really working on educating fighters, you know, coming up with best practices, really setting up a program where they help educate guys on the best way to train and how to avoid injuries. And when they open their new headquarters here in June of 2016 here in Las Vegas, there's also going to be a huge rehab center where they help guys kind of get back to health instead of just sending them to a surgeon and saying, you know, good luck, we'll see you in 8 weeks. You know, they spent time with – it's my understanding that Lawrence Epstein spent some time with Manchester City, the soccer club, the, you know, extremely wealthy soccer club, saw the facilities they had and how they treat their players. And the USC wants to treat these guys more like players, you know, more like team players, and help kind of nurse them back to health when they go through situations like that. So really kind of funny that it happened right before we had a media day scheduled, because we got to ask everybody about it. But overall, it doesn't seem to be any hard feelings. So after the media day wrapped up, you know, it was time to fly home. We just made it a day trip. We were in and out the same day. And lo and behold, we get to the airport in San Jose, walk up to the gate, and who is there but Bellator's own Scott Coker, still a San Jose resident. He was actually flying to L.A. to get to Bellator headquarters to do some work out here that he's doing this week. But it was kind of a bizarre and weird feeling. You know, I may have had an adult beverage or two in me at that time as work had been done. But I was also standing there with a UFC PR rep who happened to be on the same plane. We were kind of walking over to our gate to get ready to board. And so it's myself, a UFC PR rep, and the Bellator boss all just kind of talking shop momentarily. So a little bit bizarre, a little bit awkward. Nobody wants to say too much. But Scott said he's excited. He said, look, we've got some big announcements on the horizon. We're happy with what we're doing so far this year. And, Scott is a man that is notoriously tight-lipped about stuff. He'll never really confirm things that aren't ready to be reported. I think a good company man in that way, he doesn't break much news that hasn't been approved by everybody on staff, and you know, everybody knows he'll always give you the we'll circle back to that one in a couple of weeks, or let's have a conversation offline about that. But I will say this, I got the real feeling that Phil Davis's first opponent is going to be Muhammad King Mo Lawal, and I don't know that for a fact, and certainly Scott wouldn't confirm that at all, but just in years of being around Scott Coker and listening to him talk and how he says things and picking up on little hints and clues, I just got the impression that's the fight he wants to put together. Whether or not it'll happen, I guess we'll wait and see. Certainly, you know, you could bring Phil Davis and have him fight for a title right away if you wanted to. Obviously, the former UFC contender and newest Bellator signee, but I think the fight that they're going to go with is Phil Davis versus King Mo. So we'll see what happens. Maybe my gut's right there. I'm sure there'll be an announcement soon. He did tease that there's a couple big things going on, so I'm sure we'll see more about that in the very near future. So that was Tuesday. That was a fun day. Then it was Wednesday, a little bit more interesting day as well, because it started out with me in a district court at the Clark County Courthouse here in Las Vegas. And, Vanderlei Silva's case continues to go on. It was listed on the docket as Vanderlei Silva versus Bob Bennett, which I don't know why I seen it listed that way. It just made it funny to me. It made me think it was like a fight. But Vanderlei Silva versus Bob Bennett. Now, neither of those two gentlemen, interestingly enough, were there, but their attorneys were. Of course, Chris Eccles, who's the Deputy Attorney General for the Nevada, was there to represent the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And Ross Goodman, high-powered attorney here, well-connected man in the Las Vegas area, was there to represent Vanderlei Silva. And these two spent a good 2 hours presenting their arguments and going back and forth with each other. And, of course, this all relates to Vanderlei Silva skipping out on a drug test last May, ultimately being suspended indefinitely, essentially a lifetime suspension from the Nevada State Athletic Commission because of the severity of what he did, which was just skip out on a test. And it is kind of sad that he made that decision at the time because, you know, here we are. It's April 2015. You know, had they suspended him for 9 months or even a year, he'd be booking a fight right now. But, you know, he made the decision for whatever reason, and he's chose to kind of fight it at this point. And I'm probably I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to put up the entire thing on YouTube, and I'll put it on the site at TheMMAroadshow.com. I realize very few people are going to want to sit and watch 2 hours of legal proceedings, but it is interesting. I mean, if you've ever wanted to educate yourself on the process or see how these things are handled, it was interesting. So I think I'll put it up on YouTube just so it's there so people can watch it if they want to. I know certainly there's some people that pride themselves on their legal expertise and just like to see what's going on. So I'll put it there. But, you know, a lot of legal talk over the course of 2 hours. To sum it up, basically, the whole key is jurisdiction. He was not licensed at the time. Vanderlei wasn't. So did the Nevada State Athletic Commission have the right to ask for a test when he wasn't licensed? And that's what the defense is saying. Or I guess it's the commission is on the defense. So that's what, Vanderlei and Ross Goodman are saying, that the NSAC had no right. Now, of course, the day before the test, Vanderlei had taken part in a press conference promoting his fight with Chael Sonnen, you know, showing his intent to fight in the state, showing his intent to take part in an MMA fight in Nevada. And the Nevada State Athletic Commission contends, hey, listen, that alone should give us the right to ask him to submit to a test. So it's an interesting argument. Now, logically, I would say the NSAC is probably right. I mean, here's a guy that's fought in Nevada before. It's not like he's never been an MMA fighter. It's not like he's just some private citizen that you feel like you should have the right to test. I mean, he's fought in Nevada before. He's part of a press conference. He's saying that he's going to fight Nevada again. He's saying the exact date. He's saying the exact opponent. So at that point, I think you are kind of under the auspices of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. But legally, Ross Goodman may be right. He's presented a lot of interesting documents about, you know, what shows, you know, what's listed, who's under the auspices of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. It is somebody that's licensed. The most direct way says somebody that's licensed. So, interesting argument. Again, I'll throw that up on YouTube and I'll host it on the site just in case you want to watch it. Ross Goodman is noted as a theatrical attorney at times, and he did get a little bit excited in moments and went at Pat Lundvall, which I know that some people who are not fans of Nevada State Athletic Commission would like to see. I think she does a fine job, but I know some people aren't fans, so I'm sure they like to see the fact that he did take a little swipe at her along the way. So has promised to issue a final statement on this, a decision by May 11th. There was a lot that was sent out there, and she didn't feel comfortable making a decision right at that time. She admitted it was very complicated, and there's a lot to talk about. So she said, hey, give me a little bit of a break. I'm gonna do some more research and figure this out. So we're supposed to have an answer on that by May 11th. As soon as I got done, I ran out and ran to a new gym in town, Hybrid Performance Training Center in Las Vegas. Not the home of necessarily a fight team just yet, but it's becoming one. And that is Angelo Reyes and Ricky Lundell, who have teamed up. Angelo Reyes is a boxing coach who you're going to hear from in a little bit, who I think if you haven't heard the name before, you'll really enjoy hearing his passion, both for boxing and for MMA. He is the boxing coach of Frank Mir, the one who helped orchestrate Frank Mir's big win over Antonio Silva. Has really been working with Frank a lot on improving his striking. And so stop by there to talk to Frank Mir. He's actually heading out of town. He's going to Columbia this weekend for a seminar. And then he'll come back and be getting into full training for his, of course, July 15th fight with Todd Duffy, headlining UFC Fight Night 71. So stop by Hybrid Performance Training Center. Spoke with Frank Mir. You're going to hear that in just a little bit. Of course, Frank really just seems rejuvenated. As a longtime resident of Las Vegas, I've known Frank for a long time. Seen him, obviously, through some of the down days of his career. And I think you could see the frustration just in his body language and his overall demeanor. I think you could see it over the years. But, man, he seems really rejuvenated, really re-energized, and passionate about his career again. So had a chance to speak with him, and you're going to hear that conversation here shortly. And also had a chance to see Carlos Condit was in town, so that was kind of cool to see. He was here for a week just to stop by and get some training done. He does train with Ricky Lundell, but you know, he said for this week it was easier for him to come out and get some reps in here in Vegas, and was working with Angelo Reyes for the first time ever, so you know, picking up some new things there. It was really cool to see Carlos Condit here in Vegas. Obviously, I think anybody that's a fight fan likes watching that guy fight, and he seemed to be having a good time. Not here full-time by any stretch, but just happened to be there as I rolled in and was doing a little bit of work-wise in town. So a fun time. I've really become fans of Angelo Reyes and Ricky Lundell. I think if you're a junkie listener, you've heard a little bit of Ricky as of late, and you're going to hear a little bit of Angelo as well. I think he's going to come in studio next week and kind of break down Mayweather-Pacquiao. So a really good dude there as well. I'm really passionate about the fight game, which is always fun to hear. So, listen, got a couple interviews coming for you. That's what's happening this week. Obviously, MMA Junkie has everything covered for you at UFC 186. But I'm going to bring you these two interviews now. So, first up, we're going to hear from Frank Mir. He's going to talk, you know, how he realized he was near the end of his career, needed a win bad in February, and just really how much the win meant for him and kind of what he sees ahead. He breaks down Todd Duffy a little bit and just sees kind of what he's got going for his career and what he's got going for this year. Could end up being a big year for Frank Mir if things go his way. So sit back, relax, enjoy that talk. I am going to have a little bit of this cold beverage as that plays out, and hope you enjoy listening to Frank Mir. So I'm here in is it an undisclosed location, Frank? This is a brand new gym. I don't know, is this supposed to be a secret hideout? Or?
No, it's a new facility here at Hybrid Performance. And, you know, it started out basically just indoor soccer, but they have, you know, included the cage. They have a whole huge area for the mats for jiu-jitsu, wrestling, boxing ring. The bags are going up. Angela's showing them what bags we need. They have a weight room upstairs, a rehab center. So they're kind of making a one-stop shop for athletes.
This is like literally one of the biggest sporting centers I've ever seen, period.
Yeah, no, biggest one I've ever been in.
Yeah, it's incredible. So is this going to be home gym? I mean, you're obviously training here today.
Yeah,
but
no,
is this
I like
be it.
I like it here a lot. You know, obviously, you know, I'm real happy with Ricky and Angelo, and then bringing in, you know, James Horn to help me with jiu-jitsu on the ground. Big guy, is a great partner. Now, Mike Whitehead, you know, I really can't ask for better partners as far as that. You know, I put in a call at Alistair. He's in Asia right now, but see if he'll come out for a week a little bit just to, you know, to add to the, you know, to the thing. I think it's easier for me to bring a couple guys here than bring all the coaches that I really enjoy. Not that there's not coaches I really love in Albuquerque. I mean, one that I keep having come back and forth is Chris Luttrell, you know, and his boxing coach Ray, you know, so Diego. So I have him come out as much as I can too, you know. So just try to get the best of everything.
I want to go back to Brazil a little bit first. I mean, obviously a big win for you, one that you said, you know, you needed.
Maybe.
What did it feel like to? I mean, you had that losing streak, and you I know you got tired of answering the questions. I mean, but getting that win, man, and putting everything behind you, man. Did it change? Did it pull something off your chest a little bit?
Oh yeah, it was a huge monkey on my back, knowing that, you know, how was I gonna, you know, support the family, and, you know, obviously I feel like I could probably generate income in other areas, but right now fighting for me is very lucrative, and so there's a certain lifestyle that my children and my wife are used to living that might look like it was gonna come to an end. Or at least, you know, have a big hiccup in it. And so coming out there and being victorious was very satisfying that way on a personal note. That's why I kind of made the joke that, you know, Dad, I'm still making baby or money for you guys after the fight. But also for me as an athlete, I don't want to think this is over with. I just had to, you know, slow down and reshift how I thought about training and train more intelligently. You know, I can't break my body down and heal as fast as some other people are able to. And so, you know, I've learned how to just slow it down and train smarter.
The biggest
thing was natural approach.
Sure. Yeah, the biggest thing, obviously, was you came out fighting orthodox, showing improved boxing, that sort of thing. The one I was curious about, you didn't try to hide it all week. Your open workouts, you fought orthodox. You know, you weren't trying to keep it a secret or anything like that.
No trickery involved in it, just because I felt that I was very good with it. And even now, I mean, that's why I'm showing. I mean, I'll post things. Am I orthodox or southpaw? I'm equally fighting both sides. I feel very comfortable with it, and it's basically at that point I want both options available to me, and I'm going to just do whatever my opponent's weakest at. If I come out there and I start moving a certain way and, you know, it's successful, then I'll keep moving that way. If it's not successful, I just want, you know, backup plans.
There was a talk after that fight that maybe Brock Lesnar was coming back at the time. That didn't pan out a couple weeks later. What was your thought on that? I mean, on the one hand, I could see maybe you were kind of excited about that fight just to, you know, go back and address the rivalry. On the other hand, you know, I don't know how much Brock has left to offer anymore. I don't know, would he be a real suitable? What was your whole thing, and were you really excited and thinking it was going to come together? Did you never really buy into it?
I thought it had been a great fight for the reason being that it had a huge amount of hype, a large amount of hype. But as far as really as how dangerous he would have been, I think I would have demolished him in about 2 or 3 minutes. I think where my boxing is even on the night of that fight. Had he been in the ring with me in the octagon, I would have knocked him out. And if we'd have fought, you know, 6 months from now, you know, if the fight had accumulated up after the hype with the improvements I've had in the boxing area, he would have been mashed up pretty bad.
So
and, you know,
right
he doesn't like to get hit in the first place. So, I mean, the first couple stiff jabs down the center and pop his head back, he'll make a desperate shot, run into an uppercut, and the next thing I know, he's on the ground asking somebody to stop it.
So you made the right decision staying in the world of professional entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, and I respect the fact he's a father. If he feels he can make money that way and it's a safer route and they're going to pay him more, I don't hate it at all. I mean, I understand. I'm a family man, and, you know, a lot of decisions we make as we get older are orientated towards our children.
Yeah, definitely. You thought the Nogueira fight was out there as well. You end up with Todd Duffy instead. What was your thought there? I mean, obviously – Todd hasn't accomplished near what you've accomplished. He hasn't done near what you've done. He's a kid coming up. What was your thought when they brought that name to the table?
Well, I really thought there was nothing to gain in it. You know, right now as I'm getting older, I want to make sure that there's something to gain in the fight. If I fight somebody that moves me up the ranking system towards a title shot, you know, towards improving my career, you know, as it is, I mean, I went out there and I was a 3-1 underdog against Bigfoot Silva, right? After the fight, when I knock him out, no one's talking, you know, there's always the talk like, well, his chin shot, he sucks. I'm like, and that's what I'm hearing from the number 8 guy. He was number 8, and afterwards he sucks. So could you imagine how you line me up with Todd Duffy? After I beat him, all I'm going to hear is all the things I was saying beforehand. Was the guy's fought, what, like 4 times in 5 years? He's fought one guy in the top 10, and he lasted 19 seconds. You know, he got knocked cold out by Mike Russo, who's not cracked the rankings in our system as far as I know. And the guy had a broken arm when he did it and was getting his butt beat for the last 2 rounds, you know. So and he knocked him out like lights out cold, like, on the ground, like, didn't know who he was, unconscious, you know. And so, really, it's like, after I beat him, I'm going to get no reward for it. All right. It is, really, it's exactly what you're saying, that I was looking for a payday. It's like, well, no, not really, dude. Fighting you is a payday. I'm going to get paid the same to fight you, really, than I fight anybody else. And you're nowhere near the threat that the guys that I want to fight are.
Right.
You know, that's why no one knows really who you are. And I always tell people that's one of my worst nightmares, and it's come to fruition. People are asking me what I'm fighting, and I say July 15th, and I say, they go, who? I say, Todd Duffy. And everybody I've talked to goes, who's that? I'm like, damn it, no! He's this guy that talked trash for a little bit on the internet, but he sucks at it, and he now has gone silent again, damn it. But as the interviews come up, that's something I'm worried about him. He has to look forward to, Todd. You know we're going to do interviews together, right? We'll be on the mic at the same time talking back and forth.
That's going to be a little rough.
It's going to be rough for him.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, so when the name came up, did you say, Joe, man, I don't want that fight?
Well, I was like, is there anything else available to me? You know, I'll be honest with you. At that point, I think the UFC and everybody, until that Tuesday that they announced, I thought I was going to be fighting Brock Lesnar. And so when they announced that, they kind of put me back. So they're like, well, no, everybody that is in the top 10, they're all booked up. So if you want to take the fight because he has stirred enough interest, we'll give it to you. Normally, they wouldn't give me a fight like that. They're like, we don't really have you fight down because, I mean, let's be honest, we pay you too much money. We're not going to pay you to fight him.
Right.
We want to pay you to go fight somebody that, you know, if you're going to be on a main card with, sells, you know, more tickets. Todd Duffy doesn't. You know, I mean, his picture in a magazine, I mean, he's basically a fitness model.
Right.
But beyond that draw, that's all he really possesses is a six-pack. His knockout wins are over people that nobody knows.
Right.
You know, so they gave it to me because they're like, okay, you take this fight and then, you know, we'll look, go ahead and fight. Maybe somebody will free up that is of consequence was the word that was used that will be fighting, you know, hopefully you can fight in December, you know.
Nice. I guess the thing, and you mentioned it, man, it's the big look. I mean, listen, you've been in the UFC heavyweight division for, you know, a decade. So it's not like you haven't fought big, strong guys. When we look at him, journalists, you know, fans, whatever, look, and we see a big, strong guy that's extremely explosive very early. So is that the way you break him down? Like, I do have to be a little worried in the beginning.
Oh, yeah,
this is
no,
the
I think for
division.
The first 2 minutes, I think he's going to be explosive. I think because he fights with a lot of fear. He's a very scared human being. You see it in the locker room. You've seen it before his camps leading up to. And so he's done a good job of actually harnessing that fear and coming after people. But then all of a sudden, because that's emotionally driven, when that goes away, now he has to fall back upon his intellect, and that's where he drops that's where it just falls off. You know, that's where he's not going to be successful. So do I think he'll be dangerous the first 2 minutes? Oh, absolutely. Do I think he'll be dangerous after that? No, I think he'll be a deer in the headlights.
Are we going to see an orthodox Frank Mir? Are we going to see a southpaw Frank Mir? What are we going to see?
Well, then? You know what? I don't know. It depends on what he does. You know, southpaws hate fighting southpaws. So if he wants to jump out southpaw, maybe I'll jump southpaw. And I've been doing it longer than he has. And, you know, if he wants to stay orthodox, maybe I'll, you know, who knows? Really, right now, we're this early in the camp. I'm just learning to be a better fighter and a better boxer. And so that's why these training sessions now with Angelo I've kept up after the fight, just constantly training and working and improving upon, you know, because boxing is such a science, just like all the other aspects. It's not just about being in shape. And I think a lot of fighters in the MMA world, we think that it's all about being in shape, hip pads, spar hard. And it's like, no, every movement I do could actually infiltrate your mind and get you to do a certain movement, and I can guide you a certain way. You saw in the fight with Bigfoot, I jabbed him and got him to be interested and threatened by the jab. That's why I set up the hook. So I controlled his mind. I'm like, hey, worry about this so I can hit you with this. And then there was actually another shot. And if you block that, that's going to open you up for this. And so, but that takes a lot of time and training and, you know, knowing what to do. And so right now this is the classroom time so that when I lead up to the fight, I could spar with people. And that's actually like flashcard time. They're going to pull a maneuver on me and I have to do the proper reaction under the duress.
I like that. Is that the connection? I mean, I know that you've been very high on Angelo Reyes and obviously he's very high on you as well. Is that the connection that you have like this kind of strategic approach
yeah.
to things?
I think just I need to know why. I ask a ton of questions. I like to know why something works a certain way. And, you know, anytime someone tells me it's about being tough or being in shape, I got to find a different answer because combat and fighting is science.
What else is it about his strategy or his approach to boxing? Because he's not a name that I don't think a lot of people in the MMA world know, but just being based in Vegas now here, I'm starting to learn a lot about him.
Yeah.
And he's extremely interesting and extremely knowledgeable.
Yeah, no, I think just the whole read thing, you know, just like it correlates to all combat sports, you know. We'll play like it's a quarterback basically, and I'm doing option offense. You know, if I see the lineup in a certain way and I come up, I know what I have to do. But that came in practice beforehand, him teaching me, when you see this, this means go here. When you see this, these are your reads. So, like, right now I'm doing my reads, and I love that. Instead of kind of going like, well, just, you know, throw this. It's like, well, that's kind of like just spray and pray. I'm going to throw punches and hope one of them lands. Where now, like, when I throw a jab, your reaction is going to completely dictate what's coming next under the heat of combat.
Yeah.
And it can't, you know, there's a little bit of thinking behind it, but most of it has to be reaction in the moment. And he understands that.
Got to drill in the muscle memory and that
muscle
sort of
memory.
Thing. You said pick up a win in the summer, maybe fight in the winter, December, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is there a name, a rank? I mean, do you feel like, obviously, a guy that's accomplished what you've accomplished, I mean, I think you're always going to be in the discussion of, you know, are you in a number one contender fight? Are you around there? Are you thinking that way?
Yeah,
like,
no, I
want
to go that way
title?
Again now that, you know, I think that right now the way my body's healed, you know, I'm very happy with how the off-season drug testing is going to be right now. I think that a lot of people are going to, you know, have to train the way I train, which is much more intelligent. I think there's going to be a backlash for a little bit. You know, you can't train four times a day in the gym and, you know, and train, you know, crazy and still have a body at the end of the week. And so, no, I'm very happy. I think with the way the things are going right now, I'm going to make it to where, fighting again for the title.
You think that's going to be enough to clean people up a little bit? You think it's going to scare people?
Yeah, why wouldn't it scare you? I mean, you hear Lorenzo talk about a four-year ban. That's a long time, man. Your career is pretty much over with.
Yeah.
Why take a chance? Here's the thing. Do I think maybe some of the nobodies of our sport, will they take chances? Because if they get away, the risk to reward. Yeah, that sucks, but I think it could happen because it makes sense to me.
Right.
Logically, that formula is like, all right, well, I'm nobody. If I get caught, I'm nobody. But if I don't get caught and I can score a win over a name, can this help me improve myself? Well, yeah. Somebody like myself, it's like, well, no, I got everything in the world. What? I'm going to take a chance to win one fight, you know?
And lose 4 years worth of income and
yeah,
4 years
no.
worth of accomplishments.
There's no way. I mean, there's just – so the guys in our sport that have made it, the names, I would be shocked to see one of them mess up.
Yeah. Makes sense. I think that's probably also a message to the commission, too. Like, don't just test the headliners. Like, let's get some of the people below, too.
I think so. I think just everybody. If you're under contract, I think everybody should be tested.
Yeah.
You know, I mean – why not? You know, again, the headliners have gotten there. They're probably, you know, I think that that's not going to be the biggest problem. I think the risk takers are the guys that have the most to gain and the least amount to lose.
You said you realized going to that last fight, you know, you were thinking maybe this could be the end. I know you didn't feel that it was going to be the end, but there was a real reality.
It was a reality.
Yeah. Had you started, I mean, how do you come to grips with that, man? Had you started to cope with the idea of maybe my fighting days are over?
Yeah, you know what? I kind of like life itself. I think all of us realize that at any moment this could be our last day on Earth. but I can't dwell upon it because then you would be lost. You wouldn't be in the moment. And so then I start thinking of contingency plans of like, you know, like, for example, I have life insurance. I'm not planning on dying, but do I have set up to a plan in case I do pass away for my children to be taken care of? And do I have a trust set up? Yes, I wouldn't set up a trust. Do I sit up every night thinking about it? No, because that would, you know, drive me insane. So it's the same approach to when your career is going to come to an end. It's a death of a part of your life. Do I have contingency plans I'm trying to set in place? Absolutely. Do I think about it that much? No.
Yeah. If you pick up a win, you know, in July, or when you pick up a win in July, a win in December, I mean, that could be a real case for a comeback fighter of the year, right? Would that be something? I always wonder about that, you know, a comeback fighter of the year, if they feel kind of like not happy about it. It's like, well, that means I was down.
Right. No, it's like the same thing. Like, man, you've lost a lot of weight.
Oh, because I was fat.
It's like, thanks, buddy. You look really good now. You know, like, girl gets a makeup done. You're like, wow, look, you look so beautiful.
Okay, I look horrible this morning.
Yeah, it's almost a backhanded compliment. But no, I think because everybody in life, you know, nobody rides the high tides forever. We always have ups and downs. And so comeback, I think, so that's a good thing to say that you can come back from something. I've always taken pride in that.
Big heavyweight fight this summer coming up right before yours. Cain Velasquez finally comes back for Fabricio Werdum. You got any thoughts on that fight? Have you broken that one down in your head at all?
I have, and I don't think it's as one-sided as some people are trying to make it out to be. I think that Werdum has a phenomenal chance of winning it. I think his striking is long and pestering, and I think that means that, you know, Cain can't go in there and just close the gap, take him down, and try to let him back up, because on his feet he could easily get outpointed with the kickboxing of Werdum. It's very busy. It's very active. You've seen, I mean, he was able to land strikes on a guy, Travis Brown, who's a great athlete, and he's 6'8". You know, Cain Velasquez is a great athlete too, but he's, you know, 5'11", 6'1", in between there somewhere. I mean, I don't know, nowhere near the height of Travis. And so he's going to be able to tag him. You know, he has the reach advantage on the feet. And on the ground, I mean, you're taking down Fabricio. I mean, that's 25 minutes of not getting caught by a guy who had the ability to submit Fedor Emelianenko.
Right.
So it's not as an easy of a fight as I've heard some guys like, oh, Cain's going to run through him. I'm like, have you guys not been paying attention? This guy, Werdum, is pretty dangerous.
Yeah. It's great points, man. I hadn't thought about it. In my head, I really kind of thought it was kind of one-sided for Cain, but the way you break it down, there really is a lot of options for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a straight kickboxing match, Werdum could win him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, you eliminate the takedowns. I just seen Werdum out-kickbox Travis Brown. I mean, Travis, I've sparred with him. It's pretty damn good. Verdum's striking is extremely just – people just can't get in their head that he's a good striker. But, I mean, he out-kickboxed Roy Nelson, you know. He didn't take Roy Nelson down and win on points that way. He won a stand-up fight. He was able to score and not take shots back.
Yeah.
You know, he just knocked out Mark Hunt with a flying knee. So if Cain falls asleep for a second, he does have weapons that could hurt him, you know. And so then we go for the wrestling and takedowns. Well, you're just not going to be able to unabandonedly ground and pound and beat up Werdum. Werdum, the whole time, he's going to have more of a cautious approach. So he's going to maybe, you know, lay on him for a little while. But if he tries to really go for broke, he's going to get caught up in something. So now that slows down his offense on the ground, which also causes the fight to get started over again. You know, then you got to start up. You get a stand up. Shooting takedowns for 25 minutes, that's fatiguing.
No doubt. Well, you're coming back this summer. Got the fight on the horizon. Have you started to think about it in your mind? Is it too far out? You still got plenty of time. Have you started to think about it in your mind how it's going to play out, or is it too soon for that?
No, I mean, so far, I mean, I know that, you know, Todd's a good athlete. I think he's going to be explosive and run out there. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, once I come out there and put him in his place real fast, I wouldn't even say weather the storm, just go out there and just kind of shove it right back down his throat, that I think that it's going to he's going to be looking for ways out of that octagon. I think that the submissions would be easier than what people are going to think it is, because he'd rather get submitted by me real quick than get beat up for 25 minutes.
There you go, man. You're going to be silencing some doubters again. Does that feel good to silence some
doubters?
Yeah,
always is kind of a little smirk of them, you know. It's nice.
Nice. Awesome, brother. Appreciate the time, man. Good to have a frame mirror back in the heavyweight division.
Thank you, man.
So that was former UFC heavyweight champion Frank Mir. Of course, picked up a big win early this year and now sees big things on the horizon for himself as well. And again, listen, could be comeback fighter of the year. Can you imagine if he picks up three wins? What an incredible turnaround that would be. You know, it's good to see Frank Mir. He's been around for so long. He's actually younger than I am, which is scary when I think about that. He's a year younger than I am. He's been in the UFC for so long and accomplished so much. over such a long period of time. It's kind of exciting to see him back and successful again. So Frank Mir got some possibilities for the future, and we'll see. Todd Duffy, a big test. I know he's certainly not overlooking him, but Todd Duffy, a big, strong beast of a man. But, you know, is he as well-rounded as Frank Mir? I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to see how that one goes down in San Diego. So, listen, after we talked to Frank Mir, it was a little bit of time to talk to Angelo Reyes. Angelo Reyes will talk to you about his journey through the boxing world, how he got to where he is, trained under Freddie Roach. He'll talk to you how he got involved in mixed martial arts. He breaks down Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, a big fight next week. So a lot of fun. I think if you don't know Angelo Reyes, I think you're going to enjoy hearing from him. He's, again, a passionate fight fan. And I think anytime somebody's passionate about what they do, it shows, and it definitely shows there. So we'll let that play out, and that'll be the final interview of the day. Kind of get you caught up on where I am this week. The MMA Roadshow, of course, with John Morgan. Thank you for listening. Appreciate that. Again, Instagram, the MMA Roadshow. If you want to follow along, check out those pictures. Subscribe to it on iTunes. Give us some reviews on iTunes. Do all that good stuff. Help us build it up. Of course, you can also direct download it at the MMAroadshow.com. And we'll put it up on MMA Junkie as well. After that, listen, UFC 186 this weekend. Matt Erickson, Mike Bond, Justin Park from MMA Junkie, all up in Montreal holding it down. A card that took some hits, there's no doubt about it. I think there's still a couple bright spots there to look at. Interesting to see Rampage Jackson, of course, back on the card. That was a real interesting situation for him to be briefly off of it and back. Demetrius Johnson versus Kyoji Horiguchi. Listen, you got to favor Demetrius Johnson in this, but I was excited about Kyoji Horiguchi in the future. I do think if you haven't watched a lot of his fights, his style is fun to watch. He's the real deal. And he's exciting. He's very fast. One of the few guys I think that can match the speed of Demetrius Johnson, other than John Dodson, of course. But I don't know if he's ready yet. I guess, you know, he's being thrust on the big stage. We're going to find out. He said he fought on the big stage in his native Japan. This is a whole different situation. But, listen, not the best card the UFC has put out. They'll be the first to admit that. It's not the way they originally scheduled it. They had some hits and some changes along the way. But, hey, we're fight fans, right? I'm still going to watch it, you know. If you don't want to plop down the full $50, bring a few friends over. Maybe you can split it or something. So, anyway, that's it for me, the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. Hit me up on Twitter. Hit us up on Instagram, iTunes, all that good stuff, man. And let us know what you want to hear, what you like, what you don't like, and what we can do moving forward. In the meantime, stay tuned and listen to Angelo Reyes. Again, if you don't know him, I think you're going to enjoy him. And, hey, guys, thanks for listening. All right, so here with Angelo Reyes. Practice is just wrapped up. Obviously, you were dealing with your boy Frank Mir, and then
yes,
obviously
sir.
Had a little bit of a surprise guest as well with Carlos Conde
stopping
by.
Oh my goodness! So, our head coach for our MMA is Coach Ricky Lindell, and Ricky works with all the champions, and it was just such an honor. You know, Ricky, he asked me, and I said absolutely. And I've never worked with Carlos. I've never met Carlos in the wrestling room, but just to see his hand speed and how fast his strikes move, oh. It's actually kind of, I'm surprised he's not the champ because he throws so freaking fast.
He looked great. I think he was having a good time with you too.
Yeah,
he said he was enjoying working with you first time.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And Coach Ricky was saying that he's fighting on the end of May.
Right.
So I don't know too much about his opponents, but I could tell you that his opponent better be careful with those his hands and his feet is just insane. And of course the wrestling, I see him moving into wrestling room, it's amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's really just, we're in world class. Coach Ricky has him going with other wrestlers, you know, Frank's in there, so
You and I have had a lot of conversations over the last couple of months, but I think you're kind of a newer name to a lot of people in the mixed martial arts industry. So what I want to do is kind of introduce you and start with your boxing background.
Right.
Tell people how you came up in the boxing world.
So I'm a martial artist that got into boxing. I was doing Ed Parker's Kempo martial arts. The lineage that I did is one of Richard Lee's students, Ron Lee, was my teacher. And I actually studied Kempo karate with him all the way through, got my Kempo black belt. And we had a successful chain of dojos up north in the Bay Area, and we were doing pretty well. And about
1996-ish, 97, started just learning boxing on my own, just kind of getting into it, understanding and learning the amateur boxing because it fits really well with karate.
Right.
Boxing and karate is very similar in a lot of ways. And around 2000, then I just started teaching it with my students. And through that whole program, one of the students that ended up getting really good is Anna Hulatin, who ended up becoming a world champion.
Right.
But at the time, she wasn't even thinking of going pro. We were in the amateurs. So during that time, we would have to travel to L.A. And when I started going to L.A. about 2005, I met Freddie Roach. So then me and Freddie ended up getting a rapport, and I introduced them to Anna. And at that time already, Anna had been doing so well in the amateur ranks that she was just kind of starting to be, you know, some people would call her like the female Pacquiao. I mean, you know, nobody's the Pacquiao anything, but because she's Filipino.
Using her roots, of course.
Yeah, right. Yep. But she was very good in the amateurs. I mean, coming from a Kenpo karate background and being able to do the boxing the way she was doing it. And she ended her amateur career at number two in the whole nation.
Wow.
And a lot of people thought she got robbed on that, that she was going to be on number one. But it was at that point, from 05 to 06, me and Anna would go back and forth with Freddie. Whenever we were in town, he would work with her, he'd train her. And from 06 to 07, Freddie would actually come up to our karate school. And then in 07, Freddie told Anna, said, listen, man, the amateurs, the boxing world, they're never going to do your women's boxing the way you want it to.
Right.
I think you have the skills to become a pro, and I believe you have the skills to be the best and be a world champion, so why don't you just turn professional? So when she turned professional, Freddie Roach took her under her wing. All her first set of fights, man, from 2007 through 2011 was all under the Freddie Roach banner. And I just happened to be the lucky SOB that it was a wild card. I'd, you know, wake up in the morning, see Freddie. We'd hang out all day. I'd learn all the stuff. I'm so thankful to him in so many ways because he's, you know, he's Freddie Roach, man.
Yeah.
But even at that time, he was so nice, and he really would teach me things. And we, you know, when we were at his house, he would explain to me, this is the reason why we do this. This is the reason why we do that. So, you know, I was just a lucky guy that got to learn sort of his mentality and his system in boxing and the way he thought. And through the years, as I've worked with other boxing trainers, like in 2013, I got to work with Roger Mayweather. And just being able to compare it, but the base having been Freddie that whole time, and understanding his system, that's where a lot of our movements come from. Some of the moves that I'll do, John, you'll see it'll look similar, but some of it is very different. Also, as I explained it to Frank, and this is, I think, why me and Frank click so well, is he's a Kenpo black belt. So I took the Kenpo black belt system that we were in, and I kind of mixed it with the boxing that Freddie had really taught me.
Mm-hmm.
And I took, it's like MMA, there are certain things you can do that's pure boxing and it works. And there's certain things that's just a no-no.
Right.
Like a complete no-no. So that's where kind of the middle gap of being a martial artist has really helped, because I understand point fighting. I understand karate point fighting. The tournaments that Frank would go to, I was going to the same type of tournaments too for Kenpo karate, right? So we understand it. And when you fill the gap, we're like, hey, Frank, like today it was so funny to just be able to say to him, so when you do that hook, Frank, we want to turn into a horse dance. Now, what other boxing trainer would even say horse dance, right? But the horse dance is what we talk about when we talk about Kenpo karate all the time.
That's awesome.
So, so that's kind of, you know, where it's at. And of course, you know, the way I met Frank is Anna Hulatin decided to, you know, she's always thought about wanting to be an MMA fighter because she's a martial artist that went to boxing and blew the world up as a boxer. But then she started noticing Dana doing so much, and then Victor Cui then started putting women out. So she's like, I could go MMA. I mean, she's a Taekwondo Junior Olympic gold medalist, Kenpo karate black belt, boxing three-time world champion. She was like, well, my striking is going to be fine.
Right.
You know, so let's see where this goes. And we literally kind of, that's why me and Ricky sometimes laugh about it. When we got into MMA, I'm sorry to say, we had a little bit of a little cockier attitude of feeling like, well, what are you really going to do? You're not really going to take us down if we're hitting you, right?
Right.
And, man, first fight, Anna's on a guillotine, right?
Absolutely.
In the Philippines, 20,000 people. Everybody thought, oh, she's tapping.
Yeah.
And Anna, of course, breaks
battled
free.
Her way through it.
Battled
that was amazing.
Her way through it, ground and pound, TKO.
I didn't know much about her in that fight, but I remember watching that fight and thinking, man, she showed a lot of heart.
Right. So we still hadn't met Ricky at the time. We hadn't known. And it wasn't until that second fight that Anna then, you know, she lost the split decision in Dubai. But still to this day, even Ricky feels like she should have won that fight.
Right.
Because, you know, a reversal is supposed to count against, you know, the technicalities of it. Well, right. Whatever. Put that past us, and when we started working with Ricky, when Ricky saw her, he said, Anna, you should never lose to anybody.
Yeah.
So her first fight with him was in December, and she really used the ground skills then, and you could tell that she's kind of going through learning the ABCs of it, but
right.
She's learning it fast. And then that's how kind of the Lundell MMA and
yeah,
we all just kind of hooked up.
It's been wild just to see it kind of come together and grow. Let's talk about first, I guess, kind of your boxing theory. I mean, it's something that takes a long time to learn a system. That's not something I would expect you to be able to summarize in a quick bit. But, I mean, obviously one of the things that I've really noticed is how much emphasis you put on the jab, how much emphasis you put on building around that. So, I mean, if you were describing what your principles are and what your beliefs are, I mean, is it just a straight Freddie Roach system or is it a little bit different? How would you encapsulate it?
Yeah, I would say that it's a majority of it is the Freddie Roach style of how, like, when you see a Pacquiao move, a lot of the movements look similar. Or, like, Provednikov, we just watched him this past Saturday. The moves are similar because I was with Freddie so much and just learning from him. But the differences are some of the stancing could be a little different because you have to be a little bit wider in MMA and you can't step in too short. There are some differences in some of the long-range reads. But other than that, I would say it's kind of like, you know, it's like when you have a mixture, when you have a wine mixture that's really good, they call it a meritage, right, or a meritage or whatever. And that's kind of what I would say. It's like if Freddie Roach was the Cabernet, it's like it's 60% Cab, John, and, you know, there's a little Merlot in there and some Syrah, you know. And,
that's funny.
You know, but it is blended up. I mean, for example, like me and Frank are covering kicks right now. And it's the kicks from our Kempo background
right.
on how he's going to use it on his fights versus Freddie would never teach you to kick.
Right.
You know, or with Ricky, for example, and it's really amazing. Ricky's system of grappling and wrestling and jiu-jitsu is so unique. And when him and I first started talking and then he became my boxing student also and I started learning from him, it was so cool to kind of fit it together like a puzzle.
Yeah.
There were things where – Anna would go, yeah, in boxing, we can't do that. And then Ricky would say, yeah, this is totally allowed. And she would go, so all I have to do is this move, then filter that into this wrestling move?
Right.
And then he would go, yep. And she'd say, wow, you just made my world so much easier. And it's actually breaking a lot of the habits of boxing
sure.
of you can't grab like this, you can't do that, you can't do this. So it's really that. That's what I would say. It's even evolved even more so. Because me and Ricky have worked together now, where, you know, I was blending Kempo with the Freddie style, and now it's more the Kempo with the Freddie style with all of the Ricky knowledge.
Right.
So it's just like with Frank, I mean, Frank knows I always just say this publicly anyways. It's stupid for anyone to take his tape and study it. Just throw it away. You're going to have to wait until you get in the ring with him to see what he's actually going to show you. Because if you're studying Silva's tape, that's not how he's going to move on this fight.
Right.
He's going to move completely different because right now he's learning this system.
Right.
So me and Ricky are constantly evolving the way Frank fights to where his striking, like we're tweaking it, like even today.
Yeah.
Like I'll go to Ricky's practices to watch Frank. Ricky will come to Frank's practices with me to watch him so that we're evolving and twisting and turning and twisting.
That's
know?
Awesome. I wonder because, you know, watching you, you know, you talk about reading. And I was talking to Frank earlier, and he was talking about, you know, the way you build things off the jab. I wonder, have you had to adjust at all in mixed martial arts, especially with a heavyweight? Because, you know, in boxing, okay, I throw a jab. Oh, I got caught by that. Okay, I can't do that. You know what
right.
I mean? And, you know, you learn a little bit. In mixed martial arts, especially in the heavyweight division, you jab, you get caught, and the fight's over.
Well, here's the thing, though, right? And you're absolutely right. I think that so many people have not understand what a real jab is versus I was fortunate enough that when I was with Freddie for all those years, he preached the jab as gospel. I mean, he would tell me, like, Joe Lewis, he felt had the best heavyweight jab, and we would talk about the jab this and jab that. Even when you study a Manny Pacquiao right now, like, some people don't realize one of Manny's very best punches is the jab. His jab is phenomenal. And you're, you know, if you're a fighter and you're not studying Manny Pacquiao's jab, oh, you're missing out, man.
Right.
It's amazing how he throws it from the angle he throws it, how he can get you both on different inches and angles of it all. So when we do cover the principle of the jab, I dare any heavyweight to throw a punch with Frank when he's throwing the jab, but they're not going to hit him.
And what you say is that mixed martial artists, I guess, a lot of times they're just pawing to use range, right? And they're not really throwing a jab.
Yeah, and I don't mean that as a disrespect.
Of course.
Aldo, I love watching Aldo. I believe Aldo's, whoever his striking or boxing coach is, a very good coach. His jab, I mean, I was just because I'm still, I've only been in the MMA world for a year.
Right.
So I'm watching fights and learning kind of the 21-year history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was watching Aldo Edgar again. Now, I was there live when I watched it the first time for fun. The next few times I started watching it, I watched it last night, and I'm like, man, you just watch how Aldo, he uses the jab to set up the 1-2, which sets up that beautiful kick to break people down in the leg. And that's what you don't have in boxing. You don't have that extra, like, nitrogen boost of a kick where your 1-2 could be awesome like Tommy Hearns. But could you imagine if Tommy Hearns knew how to kick like Aldo? He would have been amazing. Yeah, he would have been a beast at MMA because he would have been doing the jab, 1-2, and then Sugar Ray Leonard, here comes my kick, bam.
Yeah.
And there it is.
So it sounds like you're embracing MMA where a lot of, like, it seems like, and I think it's changing, but over the years it was boxing versus MMA, you can only like one or the other, but it sounds like you're really embracing it, kind of becoming a student of it.
Oh, man. I mean, again, I was always a martial artist, so I loved martial arts. The sport of MMA, because I was involved in boxing so much, I think that the worlds are always just separated.
Right.
You know, like I'm the lucky one where I get to, like, I was wondering where all the great heavyweight athletes are, and everybody in boxing keeps saying, oh, well, they're football players now, or they're going into basketball or whatever. They're all wrong. The greatest heavyweight fighters right now, in my opinion, are all in MMA.
Yeah.
Right now, Cain Velasquez, like, I know Tyson Fury was talking, is Cain Velasquez will smoke him so bad. It's not even funny. It's like, Tyson, please, in the boxing world, this is embarrassing. You're just embarrassing yourself. Don't sign a contract with Scott. You're going to get into Bellator. You're going to fight some heavyweight that's just going to smoke you. It's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah.
My challenge, actually, to Tyson Fury, if Frank Warren's listening, his promoter, is Frank Mir will go in the ring with him. We won't. I mean, if Dana will allow it, we'll go to England. We'll fight him in a 10-round fight.
In a boxing match?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because
no way.
Frank Mir is so – it's been so refreshing to teach a heavyweight like Frank, who is so high in his IQ, that I'm telling you, John, like, I'm throwing information at Frank, like, a lot, like an encyclopedia, and he is soaking it all in to the point where I honestly believe that – if Frank said, hey, coach, why don't we do a boxing match, you know, before the year is over? Or, coach, next year, why don't we go do a boxing match? Tyson Fury's number 5 in the world right now? Why not? If it was okay for James Toney to come to Dana White and say, can I fight Randy Couture, why isn't it okay for Frank Mir to then say, against a boxing guy who's talking it up and saying all the heavyweights and MMA and the UFC are garbage. No, Tyson Fury, you need to slow your roll, Tyson Fury. Okay, the heavyweights from Bigfoot Silva to, you know, Miocic to Junior Dos Santos. These are some amazing athletes, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw the earlier this year. You really remember in Vegas they had Deontay Wilder versus Berman Stiverne,
right,
heavyweight title of the world. We haven't had a American heavyweight in 10 years, and
right,
Deontay Wilder wins it. In my personal opinion, I watched the Dos Santos-Miocic fight. Then I watched the Wilder-Stiverne fight. Dos Santos-Miocic was more entertaining, more high level.
Without question.
More skills that were, I mean, we're talking from wrestling to wrestling defense to wrestling with the takedown to going from wrestling to boxing.
Yeah.
That was a high level match, man. I'd love to see that one again.
Wow.
And you know, Deontay Wilder, yeah, heavyweight champion of the world. In fact, I was going to try to call Eddie House to see if I can get Frank to get some rounds in with.
That was not a great fight, though. That was not.
It wasn't. And I think that's the problem. I mean, really, again, you know, unless.
I mean, take nothing away from the man. He's not the heavyweight champion of the world.
Not at all.
But that was not fun to watch.
No. But Miocic versus Dos Santos,
yeah.
Very fun to watch. And free.
And
remember,
free.
It was free. You got to watch it for free. So.
Well, it'd be remiss to not talk a little bit of boxing with you. Obviously, the fight that was supposed to come together forever is finally coming together.
Yes.
Let me ask you. I mean, I know that you're a student of boxing. Obviously, you've been involved with Freddie Roach, but you worked with Roger as well. A, are you actually still excited about this? Because I'm hearing a lot of people, and I don't know if it's maybe just because, like, it's such a big fight that everybody just wants to be like counterculture and go like, oh, I don't even care anymore. But I mean, but are you still excited for it, even though maybe it's 4 or 5 years later? And it, you know, and once we establish that, how do you think the fight plays out?
I think that first of all, John, I think this is the most exciting fight in boxing. And you know, there's a saying that George Foreman would say where he said, boxing is like jazz. The better it is, the less people will appreciate it. And I think that you are seeing two of the premier chess players of boxing, and Manny Pacquiao right now. And you know, it's hard to argue that when it's all said and done, you can't say that Manny Pacquiao might be the greatest southpaw we've ever had in the sport. I still like Hagler. Mm-hmm. I'm still a Hagler guy, but you know, my mind might change after May 2nd.
Right.
And then Floyd Mayweather, I mean, he's just a genius.
Yep.
And, you know, it's funny to me how a lot of people will even say, oh, Floyd's a defensive genius. No, guys, it's not that. Go look up Floyd Mayweather versus Diego Corrales. Look up Floyd Mayweather versus Genaro Hernandez. Look up Floyd Mayweather versus Arturo Gatti. Very offensive. Stopped all of the opponents. There is the conundrum almost in the Floyd Mayweather camp is his uncle Roger, who had trained him for a majority of his career, was the two-time world champion. His uncle Roger is a lot more offensive-minded. His dad, who was never a world champion, but, you know, got to fight Sugar Ray Leonard
right.
at one point, he was more of a defensive fighter. So you have this three-year-old growing up in the gym seeing his uncle. Seeing his dad, then his dad starts him off, then his dad goes to jail, then his uncle takes over, trains him all those years, then his uncle starts to get a little sick health wise so then his dad comes back and the whole team. So you have this athlete in Floyd in boxing where he has the highest level of IQ for the style that they've developed against Freddie's style, which came from Eddie Futch, who trained Joe Frazier, and then Freddie really has developed how to train lefties well, and now you have this Manny Pacquiao kind of conundrum style that it's at the highest level. This will be an ultimate chess match.
You're still pumped. You're still
pumped. Oh, man. The pure boxing fans, you're not a pure boxing fan if you don't think this is going to be an amazing fight.
Yep.
This is going to be an amazing fight.
Well, now, I mean, a lot of people lean towards Floyd Mayweather by decision.
It's, you know, I hate to say it about our sport of boxing, but unlike in the UFC and unlike in MMA, and I do understand we've heard some bad decisions that we don't agree with in UFC and in MMA, but for the most part, one of the things that boxing people, please don't get mad at me for saying this. Stephen A. Smith just said this 2 days ago, so get mad at him and Skip Bayless when they're here later this week. Stephen A. Smith said, and I do agree, that boxing has regressed in the fan base sense because you don't have that Dana White figure. Hmm. And Stephen A. Smith said, Dana White gives the fans the fight they want to see. So if Vitor Belfort is number one, he will fight the champion, which is Weidman.
Right.
You know, let's say Cain Velasquez keeps trying to pretend like he's running from Frank. Let's pretend. I mean, Cain wouldn't do that.
Of course.
But I'm just saying, if he did, if Frank did his due diligence and became the number one contender, there would be no excuses for Dana to say, oh, well, the number one contender can't fight the champion.
Right.
Versus in boxing, that happens all the time.
Right.
And Pacquiao Mayweather is a classic example of a fight that should have happened 5 years ago, right? And now it's finally happening, but it took so many millions of dollars in so many situational things for it to finally happen that you have the 38-year-old Mayweather fighting the 37-year-old Pacquiao rather than fighting the 33-year-old Mayweather fighting the 32-year-old Pacquiao, right?
Which may have been a little different.
Right. So now in boxing, because I have seen this, I was there. Manny Pacquiao gave Anna Houlton ringside seats for us to watch Bradley Pacquiao won. And we were there to see that horrible injustice.
That was an injustice.
To Manny Pacquiao. And you could argue it and put it in under a microscope and blah, 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 blah. Manny Pacquiao clearly beat him. He clearly showed in the second fight why he should have just beat him in the first fight. And that's boxing for you, man. Now, we were also there because Anna was fortunate enough that Floyd Mayweather gave her ringside tickets to the Canelo Alvarez Mayweather fight. It was a majority decision. So one judge had a draw for Canelo Mayweather. I mean, come on, John.
Shocking.
Mayweather was beating him so bad.
That might be worse than the Bradley.
It might have been worse than the Bradley.
Yeah.
Honestly, right? So now you're asking me, the most wanted fight to ever happen is happening. You're going to ask three judges to judge it with no bias and just okay, I'm going to look at it like it's a computer game.
Right.
And whoever does more is who I'm going to choose. Honestly, man, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting to draw. I believe it was a 50-1 or something crazy like that.
Take that.
I would put money on to draw. 100 on to draw to get 5,000.
That's hilarious.
Because you never know with these judges.
You never know. And we say it in MMA a lot too, but it was really funny, the Bradley fight. The 12th round ended. I turned off my TV because I had to take my dogs outside. My wife had already gone upstairs, gone to bed. I turned the TV off. I went outside, took my dogs out. I went upstairs, and my wife was like, "So Pacquiao lost?" And I'm like, "No." I'm like, "What are you watching?" Like, she's like, "It's on TV right now." Like, she was watching the local news. Like, "Pacquiao lost." I'm like, what just happened? So you never know. You might be right. Take the 50-1 on the draw.
Yeah, no. I mean, just a boxing lesson history. In 99, they did the fight of the millennium. It was Oscar De La Hoya versus Felix Trinidad. And that was blah, blah, blah. Sure. Great fight. And it was an awesome fight. I thought De La Hoya won.
Yeah.
I thought he was running away with the win.
Yep.
And then Trinidad wins.
I don't want to take it away from Trinidad,
but I kind of thought De La Hoya won.
Yep.
Prior to that, Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard.
Right.
I love Sugar Ray. Thought Hagler won. I'm sorry, man. I thought Hagler won. So there's always this thing, and now we've gotten to a point where how many million? What is it? 500 million or 600 million total? That's going to come in for this thing.
Crazy.
So I don't know if I'm Vegas, I do the draw so we can do it again. Right? I mean,
the conspiracy theories are plenty.
The conspiracy theories.
Well, listen, you mentioned Anna Houlton's name a lot. We'd be remiss if we left without talking about her. I know you're a huge supporter. Obviously, you guys have a huge history together. But I have been impressed, certainly, obviously, with her boxing, but the impression that she's made in MMA as well. And with the proliferation of women's mixed martial arts, it seems like there may be some doors opening for her, although I don't know where she would fit in terms of size.
Right.
What that would mean for her.
Right, right.
But what do you think? I mean, what's the future for her? Where does she stand? What's her upside? Is Invicta the right play for her? Could she go to the UFC?
No,
what
actually, obviously.
I mean, 1FC is fantastic as well, not to take away.
No. Right now, she's contractually obligated to 1FC for a few more fights. But, she's also boxing right now. So that's one of the reasons why she did go to 1FC is because, Dana – Like Dana wouldn't allow.
Right.
Because
it's his commodity at that point. He wants to promote you and nobody
exactly.
else.
Exactly. So, and we understand that. So, and 1FC is a great organization. Dana's organization, the UFC, doesn't have 125. They have 115 and 130 and 135. And Anna right now still has a goal of winning one more belt at 122 pounds before she leaves the sport. So, really, within this next year, she's not going.
Right.
To do anything to mess that up.
Sure.
When she completely retires out of boxing, I don't know if Anna will say, "I'm done with fighting." I don't know if Anna will say, "Oh, I'll keep going with 1FC." I don't know if she'll say, "Hey, Dana, let's do it," right?
You think she could do 115 or 135?
I think that Anna Houlton, if she worked her body correctly – she could get down to 115. That's not impossible, but
again,
not right now,
right,
because
right, right.
She's trying to always be like, right now Anna walks around 129 because
right.
she wants to always be able to make the 122 limit for the title fight.
Right.
If things develop for that, she'll have a title fight by September. So, you know, she'll probably do another tune-up in boxing. Last time I talked to Matt Hume, who's in charge of 1FC, we asked for if Anna could possibly fight against Ann Osman in March in Kuala Lumpur, and we didn't get any responses for that. We asked if she could fight in April, the one that's coming up under Askren.
Right.
They're not doing that. So, and again, we're signed to the league. So, you know, when you're signed to the NBA, you do what the NBA says, right?
Right?
So I don't know what 1FC's plans are. I don't know what their plans are. I certainly know that Anna will destroy Ann Osman. I don't say that like I'm going to hide from it, because
right.
if Anna, without being with Ricky Lundell and Frank Mir helping her with the grappling, was able to get a quote-unquote split decision in Dubai the first time they fought, and that was on a second MMA fight. Now she's going into her fourth MMA fight. If Anna were to fight Ann Osman again, she'd either submit her or knock her out. It wouldn't even be close.
Right.
So I don't know if 1FC is just trying to find more talent. I hear they're bringing in a new Singapore. They signed a hot wine Singapore that's coming, 18 years old, a phenom. She's fighting in Singapore May 22nd. I mean, I don't know. So I don't know if they're just trying to build the 125 division
yep.
so that Anna will have harder opponents. I don't know. At the end of the day, though, Anna is loyal to whatever contract she signed. But, you know, again, boxing right now is in her head the I want to get a title before I can call it quits in boxing. I want to get one more belt. But it is kind of hard when she's always training with the head UFC grappling coach, the heavyweight UFC fighter. You got Carlos Condit coming. You got UFC gets thrown in Anna's face
yep.
all the time, right? And then she'll see a fight like Paige VanZant, Felice Herrig. And I like them both, but I'd be lying if I told you that I didn't think Anna could step in there right now and beat both of them. And I'm just being honest. Like, you know, I get that she's still learning the ground game, but I would dare any of them to strike with her.
Right.
I think a fun fight, if we're just talking dream matches, because we know that couldn't happen within the next year anyways, is if Joanna the champ, I call her because I can't call her last name. But if Joanna and Anna fought MMA, oh, man. The striking?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You have two striking specialists? That would be amazing.
Awesome.
Definitely nobody's going for a takedown on that one. I don't. Ricky'd probably get mad, though, if Anna doesn't take her down. But over this next Anna's having fun right now. She's going
yeah.
to wrestling all the time. Ricky's constantly teaching her to jiu-jitsu. So she's only going to evolve. She's only going to get better at that. But her boxing, she really does have – I think she'll fight probably two more times this year in boxing, the end goal being the title belt.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll decide if she wants to say, I've done everything I can in boxing. Boxing is weird, you know, like Al Haymon just stepped in.
Right.
He paid $20 million to NBC. It's being shown on free TV now, right? So who's to say Al Haymon, by the end of the year, doesn't look at someone like Anna and go, hey, I need a female star just like the UFC has it, and you're the champ.
Could happen.
So come on, Anna.
Yep.
You know, and Al Haymon works with her promoter, Alan Tremblay. So you never know. So, again, it's hard to leave boxing when you know there's the possibility that – there's
yeah.
that stage shot
that
Dana did for Ronda.
Yeah.
And look how big Ronda is now.
Right.
Right? And really, that's one of the stupidest moves boxing has ever done. Is they basically gave it to Dana.
Yep.
Like, here you go, Dana. Here's a whole bunch of awesome women athletes that you're going to promote, that you're going to make a ton of money with, that people are going to have more fan base. Here you go. Here's an entire new demographic for you, Dana. Congratulations. Right? And there are so many amazing boxers that are women that don't have the same stage that Ronda has.
Right.
And even worse, what I really love about a Joe Rogan or a John Hannick or the way the UFC portrays their women athletes is you and I both know that it is still a growing sport.
Sure.
So if MMA's only been around for 21 years and the women just got in 2 years ago, I believe, right?
Right.
Two years ago.
Yep.
Then it would be easy for media to just criticize them. But they don't.
Right.
What media does is they build them up. They say, hey, you know, Paige VanZant, she did this much better than this. She did this much better than that. Ronda Rousey, she's doing this much better than this. See how there's a buildup?
Sure.
And in boxing, and not just the women, although the women get a really bad end of it, but the males, it's always, you're always being criticized. You're never good enough. You know, it's like Floyd Mayweather, you're 47-0. Well, he's not really that good. It's like, undefeated, 47-0. Nobody's. He's pretty awesome, right? And I think that's one of the biggest differences is in boxing, I tend to find the media will cut you down. Versus in the UFC or in the MMA period,
right.
It seems like the media builds you up more, and it gives you a chance to have more fans
right.
on more of a stage. I mean, can you imagine right now if on the undercard of Pacquiao Mayweather, if they did what Dana White did.
I don't think we know what the undercard of Pacquiao Mayweather is.
There's going to be some, I believe Andrew Chabidi is on the undercard. Lomachenko, I've heard it off the grapevine.
Right.
You didn't hear it from me. I'm not a boxing guy, but there's some stuff going
okay,
on.
Right.
They're still trying to work out. That's what I heard through the grapevine. but anyways, but can you imagine if Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, they said, hey, the very best fighter in Mexico that gets the number one rating, Jackie Nava, is going to fight Anna Woolerton. On the undercard, you got the female Filipina against the female Mexican on a Cinco de Mayo. They already both have TV ratings. They already both have fan bases. They already have – so, and you just give them the slot.
Yep.
That's what Dana did.
That's
Dana
it.
Just said, I'll give you the slot.
Nice.
Show me what you got, right?
And that's nice.
And God bless you, Dana. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You never know, Dana. We maybe Anna, maybe not, but – I know some of our fighters with me and Ricky will end
if
up.
If there's
the
a
UFC.
Way to get Angelo Reyes excited, it's to ask him about Anna Woolerton.
Oh,
I know you get pumped. Let me ask you. Last thing I got for you. You know, I in February in down in Brazil, you know, you straight up you went out on record. You said, "Listen, man, here's what's going to happen with Frank Mir. He's going to come out. He's going to fight orthodox. He's going to build off his jab, and he's going to score a first round knockout." And I thought, well, that's mighty nice of you to make that prediction. I appreciate it. And sure enough. Your team delivered. So, you know, we're still a long way out from the Todd Duffy fight. It's still a lot of months to build a strategy. But what can you share with us without, you know, giving the competition too much information? What can you tell us that that you think we're going to see this time?
It was weird to me that that Todd Duffy even called out Frank Mir. Like, I got his – I understand his strategy. His strategy is, hey, man, I need to eat. I'm not even ranked. I need to fight a ranked fighter. Well, here's an idea, dude. Why didn't you call out Stefan Struve, who's ranked number 15? Because you just called out a Frank Mir who's a reinvigorated Frank Mir. This is a Frank Mir now who I have to ask him. Like last night, Frank went – he did the stairs, the strength conditioning with Uldi Haju, and he was going with our jiu-jitsu, his jiu-jitsu partner, James Horn, running stairs. And then from that, he ate his meal. He went into wrestling. And, man, they were – Carlos – Anna and Frank were in there for 3 hours wrestling, right? And then Frank's like, at the end of wrestling, he looks at me, he's like, Coach, I'm going to see you at 7. I'm going to see you at 7. It's like 5:30. He's like, I'm going to see you at 7. We're going to box. Where I'm like, you know what, Frank, man? You know, we're 12 weeks, 12 weeks left. Let's give your brain a rest. Before you go to Colombia, I'll give you 2-3 hours. We're going to do a ton of boxing, ton of striking, and that's what we did today. That's what you saw today. So a Frank Mir that's this pumped up, that's already practicing this much, can you imagine what's going to happen as we get closer and closer and closer? So I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that I don't think Todd Duffy will last 25 minutes because I don't believe he'll last 25 minutes. I respect him as an athlete. I think he's very strong. I think he's very young. The difference is Frank Mir's body right now is very strong. And Frank Mir's mind and body right now is very young. And he now has the experience of, is he the second longest tenure in the UFC?
Yeah.
Next to Cowboy Cerrone? Or?
Well, no, he's got number of fights, yeah.
Number of
right
fights,
now, but
right?
Yeah, as far as tenure,
for the UFC,
I'd have to check
the
record,
longest?
But I'd say right now, currently, he's probably got the longest tenure in the UFC.
Okay, so you tell me then, was it really that smart of a move to call out the guy who's coming off beating the ranked number 8 person via knockout off of striking to a fight when is Todd Duffy a wrestling specialist? No. Is he a jiu-jitsu specialist? I mean, I get it. American Top Team is amazing with their jiu-jitsu, but really, you're going to train Todd Duffy to out-jiu-jitsu the greatest jiu-jitsu heavyweight fighter of all time? So what's your strategy? Oh, you're going with striking. Hi, John. Hi, you know. So why is Frank Mir and I putting in so many hours? Because what I want people to be convinced of is by the time Frank Mir is done with Todd Duffy, I want everyone to stop saying that Frank Mir is done. I want all those to go away. And I want everybody to start telling me that Frank Mir might be ready for Cain Velasquez or Verdum, whoever the title is. And it's up to Joe Silva. But my goal as his striking coach, as his boxing coach, is for people to say, wow, Frank, you've really gone on your way to becoming a black belt in striking and black belt in boxing. And, yeah, I think you can take on Cain. And I'd love to. Oh, man, what a challenge. Me and Ana used to go to Coach Javier's gym all the time to spar some of their people when she was an amateur because he was in San Jose. Mm-hmm. I was in San Francisco. We would just drive there. I remember he had a heavyweight, James Zimmerman, who would spar some of our guys. And it was just fun. So I remember even seeing Cain when he was just kind of going up. It would be such a pleasure to get that. To be able to do it. But yeah, prediction-wise, man, I can't see Todd Duffy going 25 minutes. I will tip my cap to him if he lasts 25 minutes. Other than that, strategy-wise, man, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that Todd Duffy is going to try to strike with Frank. The question, though, is that, I mean, did he hire Freddie Roach or something? Like, did he hire, like, the greatest boxing, striking coaches that I didn't know about? Because striking is an art you have to learn. It's not something that is just given to you. Aldo had to develop it through the years. You remember the Hominick-Aldo fight?
Sure.
Remember how hard that was?
Yep.
Do you feel that Aldo got better after the Hominick fight and kept getting better and better and better?
Of course.
So Todd Duffy's last fight was what? Anthony Hamilton? Okay, Frank Mir's last fight was number 8, Silva, who just had the draw with Mark Hunt. Come on, man. I mean, you know, anyone who's predicting Frank Mir as an underdog right now, you should be ashamed of yourselves. You should be ashamed. Okay, the old thing doesn't work anymore. I think Frank proved to everybody that old, you can't say that about Frank now. And he's not injured. Okay, he's seeing Ricky every day, seeing me every day. He's seeing all of his partners every day. He's a reinvigorated Frank. We're still 12 weeks out, and he's coming. He's not missing practices. We have to tell him to rest. So, Todd Duffy better be working out. And don't fake an injury either, Todd. You better show up July 15th. You better show up July 15th. That's all I'm going to say.
That's all you need to say, brother. Perfect,
thanks,
man. Thank you for the time, bro.